It's a funny story. We actually went down to the founders of Snowflake and gave them a demo of our product. What we didn't tell them was that we had, between the time we had booked the meeting and actually gone down there, we had thrown away everything we had built and started over. And so we showed them something that was like literally built in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
But it ended up being something, it ended up being the first time that like someone found the interface super compelling.
Hello, and welcome to Coffee with Coalesce, a monthly podcast about all things data and the trends and technology transforming our industry. I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO of Coalesce, and here with me is my co-founder and CTO, Satish Jayanthi. Together, we'll be your hosts for the next hour.
There we go. Awesome. Hope you enjoyed the music. It's always a fun one. Today we've got a really special guest, one that I'm really excited for. It feels like it's been a while since we've done one of these. So I am stoked to have you on, Rob Wolin, one of the co-founders of Sigma Computing. So Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. And then obviously we got Satish, my beloved co-founder. I'm the CEO, co-founder of Coalesce. We've got some great questions for you. I've been excited to ask some questions around the business, your background, history of Sigma. And so why don't we jump into it? Unless you got anything you want to share on your background just to start, Rob?
I'll just let everyone know I'm the co-founder and CTO at Sigma, and I'll play along in the locations. I'm joining everyone today from downtown San Francisco in the Sigma office.
Love it. Yeah, we walked past your office a couple times when everybody was in town for Summit. It's in prime real estate. It's a great spot.
I know. We have two roof decks, so you know, if you're in the neighborhood, feel free to drop by.
Cool. It looks like people are able to hear us now, or at least it's all caught up. So we've got Samantha Wall from Manchester, UK. Welcome, Samantha. For anybody else, hit us in the comments. That was not what I was going to expect from the first person in the comments section as far as locations go. So awesome. First thing I would love, you know, every time we've got a co-founder on as a guest for Coffee with Coalesce, like both Satish and I feel like we've shared our founding story so many times, whether it's fundraising, whether it's with customers, prospects, partners, and it's always a fun thing to share. So I would just love to hear your founding story. Given you were an entrepreneur in residence at Sutter Hill, I would imagine most of our audience has never even heard of what an entrepreneur in residence is. And so maybe you could just share what that experience was like. What is being an entrepreneur in residence, and how did the founding story come to be?
Sure. It's a mouthful, right? Entrepreneur in residence. It sounds, sounds so esteemed. I feel like it's a funny little title. So I think what's interesting about this is Sutter Hill is a little different than a lot of the other VCs. So, you know, most VCs are looking at companies in the market and deciding, you know, whether to invest in them or not. Sutter's strategy for quite a while here has actually been to try to start companies. And so their idea is basically to take generally technical people that they've had a longstanding relationship with. So I was fortunate enough to have worked with some of the partners in Snowflake. Gosh, I'm dating myself, but since the late 90s. And so I had a longstanding relationship with them. And I just spent almost 7 years at Salesforce. So I was a CTO there and ran parts of the platform product. And I was kind of looking to go start a company, but I think like many people, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to go do. Right. And so the entrepreneur in residence at Sutter Hill is basically a chance to, you know, get out of your current company. So you become an employee of Sutter Hill. They don't pay you market rate would be the way I would describe sort of the incentive structure. And so, you know, you're not going to hang out there for like 5 years.
Right.
It gives you sort of a chance to have like the resources of the firm to meet with a bunch of people that are super experienced in starting companies. And really sort of just work on kind of like, what is the idea for the company, you know, test ideas, talk to people, and sort of do that ideation process that I think happens early in any company. So for me in particular, I joined in early, it's actually 2014. So we are on 10 years now. It is a journey. I had shown up at Sutter Hill with sort of some high level things that I'd seen personally in my career. And so one of the things that really struck me was how much cloud infrastructure had changed things in the ways that we worked. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes feel old and curmudgeonly when I pull over, you know, some young developer today and I'm like, you don't understand. If I wanted to get 5 servers, I had to go buy 5 servers. I had to go rack 5 servers in some data center. Someone had to wire them up. It took months. You know, it's not just like make an API call, spin up 5 servers and shut them down 10 minutes later. Right. And so what really struck me then was like, if you look at that level of transformation, mm-hmm. what are all the ramifications of it downstream? And so we were in particular very interested in saying, we'd sort of seen how it had changed developers' lives. We were really interested in saying, how did all this cloud infrastructure, in particular cloud data infrastructure, how could it change the lives of essentially the masses, right? Most of the knowledge workers and the work that we're doing. And that was really the genesis of how we got to what eventually became Sigma, was we're really focused on how do we make it just orders of magnitude easier for people to leverage this type of infrastructure.
Got it. And one of the things that I've seen our mutual customers talk about when it comes to Sigma is this spreadsheet-like interface. Was there, what was the genesis of that specific component? Because, you know, for us, we see the tailwinds of cloud adoption. We saw how accessible infrastructure became. And then you've obviously taken on this business intelligence market and the data analyst community for delivering Sigma's product. And the one notable thing I always hear is how it mimics an Excel spreadsheet-like interface. But how did you come to that conclusion?
Well, we talked about journeys. It was very much a journey. So we left Sutter Hill in summer of 2014. And I would say we didn't really get to what even anything resembling what you're describing until 2017.
Okay.
Arguably even 2021, which I'll talk about in a second. So I think like many entrepreneurs, you know, you need a lot of confidence to just even start this journey. Right. I think every entrepreneur has sort of kind of an inner drive to want to go ahead and do this and jump out in the world. And so we left Sutter Hill with the idea I just told you and the idea that is still the mission of Sigma today. Mm-hmm. But it took a long time and a lot of iteration and a lot of failure to figure out like what is, you know, it's easy to say we're going to make this infrastructure accessible to billions of people.
Right.
The how and like what is the right interface, I think, is the critical problem. How do you actually make it so people can use these things and understand what they're doing and do complex things? Right. I think a lot of the problems in the industry in the past have been that people just assumed like, well, if you're not a programmer, all you ever want to do is like click a button and filter on a dashboard. And if you look at, you know, how people use things like Excel, it's actually pretty complicated. Right. I mean, like, most programmers would struggle to understand what like complex Excel spreadsheets are actually doing. And so once you sort of appreciated the level of sort of complexity and really the needs of these customers, then I think it was a big clue to us to start thinking about like, how do we make an interface where the easy things are easy, but you make all the complex things possible. And that really got us very inspired by spreadsheets. And that was actually in 2017. So after over 3 years of iterating on product and interface and throwing things away and starting over, that we got to something that even resembles that. It's a funny story. We actually went down to the founders of Snowflake and gave them a demo of our product. What we didn't tell them was that we had, between the time we had booked the meeting and actually gone down there, we had thrown away everything we had built and started over. And so we showed them something that was like literally built in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
But it ended up being something, it ended up being the first time that like someone found the interface super compelling.
So both Satish and I, you know, we had a very clear vision of what we were going to build when we started Coalesce. So we have complete opposite stories. Like we were in stealth, crystal clear vision, just needed to put pen to paper. In your situation, it was like finding product market fit. Like I would imagine you spoke to so many people to try to determine what it was that you were going to build to give people access to this newfound infrastructure in the cloud. Do you have an idea of how many conversations you had trying to find product market fit?
A lot. You know, I made this comment about, you know, 2017 and then 2021, because we actually rebuilt our entire interface in 2021 after we already had, you know, a bunch of customers, already had a bunch of employees, already had people selling the product. And it's a lot of this, you know, conversation around product market fit, right? We felt that the interface we built wasn't quite right.
Right.
In sort of the conversations with customers, it was clear that there was friction in how they were using it. But I think this is one of the hard things about starting a company is that, you know, sure, people will give you ideas of what the problems they're facing are, but they, you know, it's rare that someone describes to you, here's exactly what I want. We never had any, you know, I never had anyone who said, hey, if you could really make something that, you know, worked like a spreadsheet, but ran on top of this cloud data infrastructure, like Snowflake and Databricks, like zero. Yeah. So it's incredibly hard.
Just out of personal curiosity, I mean, I feel like both Satish and I, we were somewhat spoiled in that sense because we didn't have to go through this process, go through that part of the journey. And I guess, how did you stay motivated and stay sane at the same time going through that process? Because I feel like it would just drive me nuts.
I will tell you, there were definitely challenging times. I mean, we had built the company up to, I think, 5 or 6 people in the first year. And then 2 or 3 of them left after a year. And I couldn't blame them. We, you know, we've been iterating for a year and hadn't gotten to anything yet we felt great about. So we were back to, you know, it was only 3 of us, my co-founder and our first employee. The great news is all, you know, the 3 of us, we're all still at the company today and still cool, working through this. But, you know, startups are very much ups and downs. I think for us, we were laser focused from the start on the only outcome we wanted to do was build a big public company. And, you know, I think one of the really hard things for people is aligning on sort of what type of company they're trying to build. Because I think a lot of the horror stories I see are people that are trying to build things that are, you know, not venture scale businesses, and they're trying to get VC funding or vice versa. So we were just very sort of focused on the end goal from the start. I think that's what kept us moderately sane. But I will tell you, you know, there were definitely periods of doubt.
For sure.
It's life.
Well, look how far you've come. Congrats on all the success and congrats on the recent, was it Series D round that you guys raised?
Yes, we just closed the Series D a couple months ago. And yeah, we're running now around 1,000 customers. Growth has been amazing the last few years and just been wonderful to engage with so many of our users.
Yeah, it's awesome. We use Sigma internally. I love it. Personally, I was looking at a dashboard earlier today. So
glad to hear it.
You've definitely got the right formula now, regardless of all the trials and tribulations you went through in the early stages. Any lessons you learned as a founder that you'd like to share with the audience that come to mind, whether that's in the early stages or even recently?
I think for me, one of the big things I think a lot about is, you know, as the company transitions, there's a lot of things that no longer make sense, right? So, you know, things that were great when we were 5 employees, we used to gather the whole company together, do a daily stand-up for the entire company every day, and then we would all go to lunch together. And you know, it's fun when you're 5 or 10 people. It's part of that sort of joy of, you know, early stage and building a community. Obviously, sure, you know, we're 450 employees today. I don't take them all to lunch with me every day or do an entire company stand-up. So there's things like that just like they break as you go through these different transitions. But I try to separate what are the things that, you know, no longer make sense in this new sort of stage of the company versus things that, you know, I always want to hold on to. So, yeah, you know, we're super focused on transparency. We have a heavy Slack culture. I tell people, like, you know, you can sit next to me in a meeting, I'll probably still Slack you, you know, during the meeting and be, you know, chatting to you that way. Yeah. And because of that, we do things like, you know, every deal we close, you can see every support chat, you can see, you know, you name it, we pipe it all into Slack and try to just make it so like people can see almost anything about the company that's going on. And, you know, I want to hold on to stuff like that as long as possible.
That's cool. Yeah, that makes sense. I definitely can empathize for that. I mean, going from 5 employees to roughly 100 now here at Coalesce, like in the early stages, it was so nice being able to have one-on-ones with every employee. And I wanted to continue that. And it's hard to let go of situations like that where you feel like you're getting a little bit less connected to the team, whether that's going to lunch after every daily stand-up. But, you know, you have to do that. And companies shift. They change and they evolve. And, you know, what worked at 10 employees doesn't work at 450 in your case. And you just got to stay dynamic. So that, yeah, that definitely resonates. If you had to go through the process again, 10 years later, would you? And what problem would you tackle now? Or would things have changed from your perspective?
So I love the idea of the program Sutter Hill has and how they start companies. And there's other accelerator programs that are similar. I think one of the crazy things about starting companies is that, you know, a lot of the people that are, you would probably argue, are like some of the best people in the world at it, have only done it like once or twice, you know, right. And so it's hard to find people that have like repeatable experience at starting lots of successful companies. And so that to me was the really sort of inspiring thing about working with the team at Sutter Hill, was that they had started lots of companies that, and so they were able to sort of, you know, pattern match and coach you on things that are interesting. Whereas even for myself, I feel like I've started one company, like, you know, yeah. I feel like I have lots of lessons, but, you know, in the end, I've only done it once. So I definitely think I would try it again if I was starting a company. I like the pattern. You know, obviously, I'd like to think that I would get to product market fit much faster than I did the first time. But to be honest, you know, I also just sort of feel like what matters the most is where you end up. And, you know, the journey is sort of, it's part of the challenge of startup. So I don't know, I might do, you know, it might take me another 7 years to figure it out. But but as far as, I guess, what I would do, you know, as you'd imagine, I have more than a full-time job right now. So I'm not super focused on ideating on startups. But I think I've spent pretty much my career building these kind of horizontal platforms, I would call them, right? So people use Sigma in almost every industry for all sorts of use cases. Like, and before that, I built a lot of the platform stuff at Salesforce. I worked on Java platforms for a long time and operating systems, things like that. So I've never done something that was like focused on a very specific industry. And I think if I started again, it'd be interesting to try that as a totally different approach. Find like some, you know, something I know very little about, but has like clear problems, and just sort of focus on a very focused persona versus, you know, thinking about, you know, we have a lot of customers in oil, gas, and a lot of customers in retail, and a lot of customers in finance. It's like, there's not, you know, I'm not focused on a particular vertical, but I think that'd be interesting to try.
Yeah, that would be. That's interesting. We're the same way. Basically, if the assumption is if you're on Snowflake, then we're a great fit. And so I would imagine Sigma had a similar type of application, but to anybody that's in the cloud. And so that makes a ton of sense. And I personally, I've always found the Sutter Hill method so interesting. Like I remember first hearing about it with Snowflake in particular, with that whole concept of an entrepreneur in residence, and you incubate the company and you build a product and then you take it to market while you're typically in stealth mode. And they've clearly got a winning formula between Pure Storage, Snowflake, Sigma. I think there's tons of other examples here. And so it's such a cool way to approach starting a company. So it's awesome. It's awesome to hear that. Satish, any questions on your end? I feel like I'm asking everything. I don't want to box you out here.
Oh, great conversation here. So I do have a question. I want to go back to the spreadsheets thing that we were talking about earlier, the interface. You know, I spent some time in BI a lot in my career. You know, whatever you build, it usually ends in a spreadsheet anyways. That becomes their, you know, standard universal BI tool. So, you know, you basically combined the two most common interfaces or two most common analytical tools, spreadsheets and SQL. Now, people have been talking about, you know, death of these tools or these analytical tools for decades. What's your take on that? I mean, are we going to still have spreadsheets and SQL in the future?
I'm fairly confident we will. I think, you know, as you can imagine from what I work on in my product, I'm pretty bullish on both concepts. I think the, you know, one of the, you've certainly seen, I think, one of the interesting changes in the data space is just the rise of Python the last, let's say, 5 or 10 years. Yeah. And so, you know, that's been something that we brought into our product. We're very focused on, you know, sort of wanting people to be able to leverage the best tool for the job. And I think, you know, natural language would be another, an interface that's part of this as well. But what I think is actually important is that just having any one of these interfaces is not quite right. What you actually want to have is the ability for people to seamlessly work in any of these interfaces and work together. And I think those two things are what's been largely missing in the market. There's lots of, you know, like the ability to run Python code. There's lots of things, you know, notebooks. There's a million things you can run Python code. There's a million tools where, you know, you have a SQL ID and you can run SQL. But what's we've really been focused on at Sigma is to say, how do I actually make it so the person who's using, you know, Python to build a machine learning model could take the output of that and very easily expose it to a user who then wants to, you know, write some spreadsheet formulas and do some visualization on it. And that work could be picked up by someone who then wants to write a SQL query against it. And how do you make it so like they very easily collaborate and work together? And I think that anything you can do to break down these silos and bring them all together, that's sort of what we're very passionate about.
That's cool. Can you talk a little bit about the audience that what's their, like the personas that are using the Sigma?
Yeah, so it it's interesting because it's across all sorts of a whole spectrum, right? So on a company thing, it's everything from a, you know, we have some Fortune 10 customers all the way down to, you know, one or two person startups. On a role perspective, I think one of my favorite Sigma slides ever was we did a study of like, what are the breakdown of the titles of people that use our product? And as you'd imagine, there's lots of people that have a title of, you know, analyst or because of our spreadsheet background, you can imagine we have lots of people in finance. But if you actually looked at like the distribution, it was roughly equal between people in like sales ops, marketing ops, product management, you know, HR and analysts. And so it like, it broke down. And if you just squinted at it, you're like, those are all people that like have data and would use spreadsheets today. And so it was really cool to see like that like sort of variety. And I think I mentioned, you know, on the industry side, you definitely see concentrations in things like, you know, finance. You see concentrations in retail because there's lots of critical things like, you know, supply chain management. You actually see a lot in like energy because there's a lot of data volume there and a lot of like things like environmental restrictions where you're trying to very quickly react to anything or make quick decisions. So you see concentrations, but you see also just like, you still see like random one-offs of like, huh, I, you know, did not expect that was what someone was doing. And it's cool to see.
Yeah. There was a really awesome story about your most recent fundraise in the Series D. I actually knew a couple of the investors that came into the round, and I want to say I read an article, but your data room was built with Sigma. And for the audience that doesn't know what a data room is, basically for venture capital investors, they want to get access to all the documentation and internal financials and such for a company. And so you usually store that in a data room, but whatever was stored in your data room was built with Sigma. Whose idea was that? Do you remember that being part of the process? And was that part of the process in the past as well?
So it's a great story. So in our Series C, which we raised about 2.5, almost 3 years ago, we tried this. And we had we used Sigma as our way to expose like all the data to our investors and all the company metrics.
Yeah.
But at the time, you couldn't do like a lot of what these investors, of course, want to do is they want to like, you know, just like in a spreadsheet, they want to say, well, you know, what if the company did, you know, slightly different numbers here? How would all these other things react? And you could at the time you could not really do that in Sigma. So what we found is that we exposed the data to them in Sigma, but they all downloaded it and built different, you know, models and spreadsheets.
Right.
With the Series D this spring, we built a feature, and a lot of our work over the last couple of years has been to allow write back and to allow people to actually say, you know, I want to change this value and see how everything reacts. And so what we found in this this iteration was they were actually able to do all of this type of like scenario modeling and data analysis directly in Sigma. So we had the investors were doing all of their like forecasting, all of their modeling directly in this data room that we exposed on Sigma. And so it was super cool and a lot of fun for our team to build.
That's so awesome. Yeah, it was a great story when I read that as well. So it's awesome to hear it from your perspective on how it actually came to be. We actually had a couple customers at Snowflake Summit co-present that were Coalesce and Sigma customers. I want to say it was Shane Coe, Justin, and Gu from Group 1001. And those are two customer stories that I've been very close to. I'm curious, do you have any other customer stories that you've really appreciated that you've come across over the course of the past year, a couple of years, that come to mind immediately?
Yeah, one I love, because it's a brand we all know, is DoorDash. And so, nice. You know, DoorDash has been with us several years, one of our larger customers. And, you know, as you'd imagine, they have lots of data about dashers and deliveries and restaurants, all these things they want to analyze. But for sure. I think one of the coolest things they do with Sigma is they actually use it to expose their data to their partners, right? All of the restaurant chains, you know, if you're a McDonald's or, you know, a Pizza Hut or a Burger King, you want to understand, like, how are deliveries and how are orders trending for my company on DoorDash? And so they use us as that vehicle of how they expose the data and let those people run, you know, they want to run their own analysis on this data, and they do it all through Sigma. And so that type of use case, we are seeing, you know, our customers engage their customers, I think is super fun. And it's one of the great things, you know, we talk about this transition to cloud, like, this never would have been possible if you had to let them into your data center. So it's a great way to sort of get that partnership to work.
Is that an example of an embedded use case, Rob?
This one is they're just exposing Sigma, so it's not a you know, they're not trying to like embed it in some other product. But embedding for us has been a huge area, especially over, I'd say, the last 3 years. You're seeing
that's what I've heard. Yeah, I'd love to hear more.
Well, I think we've seen just a big move toward these cloud data products. So if you look at the market, right, you're seeing, you know, all sorts of companies say, I want to manage my data in a Snowflake or a Databricks or a BigQuery, because of the scale, because of the performance, because of all the aspects we've talked about. And then they start looking at, like, well, how would I expose to my customers this type of, you know, freeform exploration? And, you know, you can build sorry vanilla sort of dashboardy things relatively easily, but if you want to actually expose to your customers that same sort of freedom to say, you know, how would they do their own modeling, how would they do their own how would they record like their changes and do these sort of like what if scenario modeling without, you know, downloading all of your data, that's really been sort of the opportunity for us. And so you know, these write back features that I talked about earlier, bringing that to an embedded context has been a huge use case for us.
That's awesome. Satish, I feel like you had experience with struggles associated with embedded visualization. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. We were doing the exact same thing that what you're referring to, Rob. You know, when I was working for a stock broker dealer, this is, you know, we were supporting 10,000 financial advisors back office data, and we wanted to expose an application where they can do analytics on their own business. And we were looking at that time, this is a long time ago, it was very hard to have that embedded use case going.
So yeah. I think he used one of the key words there, application. A lot of, you know, a lot of times people talk about dashboards and things like that. But if you think about, if you just step back and think about spreadsheets, people run their companies on spreadsheets. Spreadsheets are applications, right? They're things that, you know, people type things into, they're changing data, they have workflow, right? You know, I changed this, now it needs to be approved by someone. And so that type of transition from, you know, just sort of read-only dashboards to actually sort of data applications, I think is one of the things that we're super excited about at Sigma. It's a lot of the fun use cases we've seen.
That's awesome. Yeah, so one thing we've always been very passionate about is alleviating or solving bottlenecks. So we often talk about how the biggest bottleneck for analytics use cases, getting the raw data to the point that it's consumable for something like Sigma here at Coalesce, at least that's our driving mission. And so I'm curious, when you think about bottlenecks as far as Sigma is concerned, like there's this example with an embedded use case, but what other bottlenecks do you see Sigma solving that impact customers that come to mind or that you've experienced or have felt like you've really, really done a rock solid job at?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember even from the start, one of our first users was actually a CEO at a company. And nice. His problem statement to me, it's still one that I think about almost every day. He said, look, like, I'm the CEO. I can call anyone up and get them to build, you know, a dashboard, you know, and they can, you know, build the coded version of this, and we'll know it's correct and have it, you know, all locked down. And he was like, but look, I don't know what I want. Like, I don't know what I want until I actually like get the data and I play with it and I can iterate on it and I can explore it. And so for him, the problem was not, you know, hey, can I, you know, get a solid set of metrics and get a, you know, codified dashboard? It was, how do I have something where I can like play very easily and then figure out, okay, this is something that's super high value. Let's push it down into the infrastructure and figure that out. And I think that sort of spectrum is super interesting. We've seen products that have gone like super hard at the analytics as code. And we've seen people, you know, we've seen Excel, which is probably the other extreme of, you know, it's the Wild West. You can do whatever you want. And generally speaking, I think both extremes are pretty wrong.
Right.
And you want to be in the middle and allow people to sort of over time move things toward the spectrum of being more governed and managed. You need the ability to have that sort of top of funnel where people can just like play with something, very quickly realize this is not a good idea, throw it away and try something else. And that that conversation for me, it's funny. I mean, it was 2014. It's still think about it a lot.
That's so cool. We have a similar philosophy as well. There's a strong parallel around, you know, in the transformation space, you know, organizations or vendors would go like everything is code and just go so code first, so code centric, or they go completely on the other side of the spectrum where it's this simplistic, you know, UI driven technology that limits your flexibility and extensibility. And we've always felt like a balanced approach would be the right one. And that's what's resonated with our audience. And so it's interesting to hear that same philosophy applied to your part of the stack and the success that it's brought you is very cool. So by the way, for anybody in the audience, if you got any questions for Rob, for any of us, feel free to shoot a comment. I see somebody's talking about how cool it would be to use Gen AI in the data room as well. Rob, I feel like it wouldn't be a Coffee with Coalesce session if we didn't bring up something Gen AI related. I know that there's been a lot of conversations on how that could impact between Gen AI and LLMs might change BI. What are your thoughts there as far as Sigma is concerned? Like, what has your perception been as this has become such a hot topic for organizations?
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked to be on something and have someone ask me an AI question. This is unheard of.
It must be the first time you've ever been asked that.
Absolutely. AI, you know, what is that? And I guess I'd say a few things. One is, you know, overarching, I think we're very early on AI. So I personally am a believer. I believe, you know, very much it's going to change things very dramatically over the next 10 or 15 years. Yeah. But the analogy I've given a lot of people is if you're old enough like me to remember when cell phones first came out, the whole novel thing with cell phones was I could call someone and not be at my house.
Right.
And to be honest, I could care less about the phone part of my cell phone right now. That's like the tiniest value to me, right? The fact that I can press a button and have a car show up and pick me up, or that I can like, you know, get a Google map or a browser to the, like, these things are transformational. But I feel like they were not really discovered until you had this technology for a while and you got to go through several generations of improving it. And I feel with AI that my personal feeling is we're kind of in the same way. I'm a bit underwhelmed by some of what I see in the industry right now. I think there's not enough focus on the interface still. So we're sort of satisfied with, you know, I'm going to give you a empty search bar, hope you type a magic question and give you a magic answer, which right. I'm virtually certain is the wrong interface. But I think that, you know, is a challenging problem to figure out the right interface. And so that's been something that we've personally, as you'd imagine, been spending a lot of time thinking about. But I also come back to, you know, a lot of our core mission that we've talked about as a company is how do we take this type of infrastructure and expose it to a much broader audience? So a lot of what we've been very focused on is trying to say things like, as all of the, you know, things like Snowflake and Databricks bring out their AI and ML features, how do we build interfaces around it where they're very easy for someone who's in marketing to use without having to think about, like, you know, what model from Hugging Face do they want to download, right? It's like, no, they want to, you know, they just want to think about, hey, I want to do a forecast or something. Like, how do I make that super easy? So yeah. I think, you know, overarching, I think it's early. I think there needs to be a lot of focus on interfaces. And I think a lot of the sort of value right now is figuring out how we take a lot of this type of infrastructure and make it very usable by lots of people so they can directly benefit from it, but also so that they can help us figure out what are the real end user, like, game changing use cases of this technology.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good comparison between mobile devices. I mean, they didn't really explode until the apps, the applications, the, you know, app marketplace in the case of like the iPhone really started to take off, you know, like making a phone call from wherever, that's cool and all. I guess at that point in time, it was convenient. There was a level of convenience there, but really the mobile market developed so much just from the infrastructure as that expanded. And yeah, I generally agree with that. I mean, the infrastructure there is opening up opportunity, but it's still pretty early as far as use cases go. Are you using any Gen AI or LLMs within Sigma today?
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, so can you share?
We've built out a number of different features. So we do things like you can use natural language to write formulas. You can use AI to do things like help you correct things. You can use some of like the Snowflake Cortex technology to do things like, you know, I want to classify a bunch of data, or I want to call out to a model with a prompt. And so we've done things like that to lift it. So, you know, if you can write a spreadsheet formula, you can now take data and run it through, you know, an LLM and leverage that type of power. So we've exposed all of those things. We've exposed things like forecasting models. And then we've also made it so that if you have a data science team who's building, like, you know, modeling and building machine learning models, you can actually make those directly callable from a Sigma workbook as well. So, you know, again, back to this general theme of, like, how do you break down these silos and say, we have a team over here that's building a machine learning model. How do we make it so someone could actually, like, use that very easily without having to call into it with, you know, a bunch of Python code?
Yeah. And, you know, how much of this do you see as hype when it comes to Gen AI or LLMs? Or maybe another way to ask that too is, what part of the analytics workflow or the industry do you think is going to be impacted most by Gen AI and LLMs?
So I, you know, I'll admit I'm a believer, so I'm not on the, you know, I'm not on the it's overhyped side.
Yeah, you're not a naysayer.
I'm not a naysayer, but the way I think about it is I try to draw a line sort of conceptually between what is work that a machine should do and what is work that a human should do. And, you know, at some point in our history, people, you know, manually would pull out a slide rule and try to calculate things. Today, obviously, we would just have computers do the math for us, unless you're, you know, in grade school like my kids. Yeah. The I feel similar with AI. I think it's going to help us, you know, automate a lot of things. It's going to help us, like, get started on a lot of things. So I think of it like, I try to think of the analogy of, like, you know, the AI sitting next to you as a super intelligent human. What could it do for you? I like those types of things of making humans more productive, more so than I feel like I'm skeptical that it's going to, like, take away huge amounts of jobs. If anything, I suspect it's going to create a lot of jobs.
Yeah. Have you come across, either of you really, where a scenario where you've been underwhelmed by what has come out between ChatGPT? Like, you talk about having just a search interface, something like Perplexity or ChatGPT. Like, what has been underwhelming that leads you to say we're early still in the way that people interact with it?
I think I've seen a lot of AI demo, especially demo videos, where something amazing happens.
Yeah.
And they're really cool.
We should try that to teach.
Exactly. I know where this is going.
But I think it's hard to, when you actually, like, stare at these things.
Yeah.
You know, natural language, for instance, is highly ambiguous. which on one hand makes it fantastic, right? It is a great way to start. But it also means it's very rarely crisp enough to be the answer. Like if you think about the analogy of, imagine you had like a personal, actual, like incredibly knowledge data assistant. You wouldn't walk up to them and say, what is our revenue? And they say 42 and then just walk away. Right. That's not the how you would interact with a human. You would have like a real task for them. You'd have a bunch of related questions. You would iterate back and forth. And so when I talk about the interface, like that to me is sort of, how do you figure out how to mirror the human experience, but automate a lot of it? Right. And that, that I think is a really challenging problem.
Steve, anything you want to add there?
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with that. And there's a lot of other challenges like, bias into these models. I mean, who is training these models? What kind of data is going into these models for training? And mm-hmm. if you know, what goes is what, you know, what you get, like garbage in, garbage out scenario there. So we at Coalesce, we strongly believe that the foundation for training these models, the data that goes in, the context that we provide, those are super critical, mm-hmm. at least to control these models for automation. Again, I completely agree. It's a tool. And you got to use it wisely. Don't rely on it completely and lose control.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how that interaction evolves, like you said, around the interfaces to mimic a more human experience. And I'm sure it's headed down that path. You know, I think the Gen AI market is growing incredibly quickly. It's getting tons of funding, obviously, as well. And so it's going to evolve rapidly. It'll be interesting to see how it comes to life. Very interesting. I'm also curious to see how it continues to evolve Sigma's business and the product. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Rob, we're close to being wrapped up on time. Maybe one last question I would ask you is what is anything the audience should know about Sigma, the company, or, given you've got the ears of some people, like what would you like to share with the audience or your users or customers?
Sure. So I think for me, one of the interesting things that we're really focused on is if you look at how data has changed, right? For a long time, people looked at data sort of only historically, right? I'm going to build a dashboard to look at what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. What I think is one of the really interesting transitions that we're seeing with these sort of cloud data platforms is you're starting to see them move into applications. You're starting to see them move into forecasting. What's going to happen in the future? All of this sort of transformation of thinking of it, not just as a sort of read-only historical record, but actually if a data warehouse is the place where I have all of my data about my customers, it's probably also then where I want to actually have a customer-oriented application. And so this type of transition from just thinking about things as like read-only dashboards to thinking about them as like read-write applications is probably one of the things that I'm most interested in super excited about. So these are the types of use cases I love hearing about from people.
Yeah, that's so cool. Talk about a potential and right now happening industry explosion similar to the app marketplace. It's how people leverage their data warehouse as a centralized location using the cloud to open up so many new use cases and interactions and dynamics for customers, whether it's on the business intelligence side or just simply building an entire application on top of that data that's been built and accessible. So certainly something we're passionate about as well. Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. This has been one of my favorite conversations. It's been such a blast. So thank you for joining us and congrats on all the success. Such a cool story, incredibly fascinating. And it's been a total pleasure, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you, Rob.